across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlove.
Thank you, Don Rue. Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It is Friday, it's June 16th, 2023, National Fudge Day, and also soon to be Father's Day. So a little happy early Father's Day to folks out there, whether you're wearing your dad's shirt, whether you've got your Roy Kent coffee mug, as I do from my daughter. Hope you have a wonderful Father's Day in whatever way, shape, or form you decide to celebrate. Coming up this hour, we're going to visit with a colleague of ours. As a young woman, she left Wisconsin to pursue life as an actress, a comic, a filmmaker, came home, started creating some smart, funny videos about the news. Kristen Bryan now has a statewide midday talk show here on the Civic Media Radio Network that's been named one of the top programs on the Milwaukee radio dial, and we will visit with her coming up later on in this hour. Also at 7:30, our friend Mark Jacob will break down all the media coverage of this week's Trump arrest and arraignment. If you missed it in our last hour, karma came calling for the former president. Donald Trump was greeted in Miami by a protester whose handwritten sign was done on a paper towel to throw back to the rolls of paper towels that Trump threw into a crowd of hurricane survivors in 2017. We talked about that and other big stories with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. And if you missed that, that show is already a podcast. You can catch the show anytime. Subscribe to us as a podcast at Apple, Spotify, all the usual spots, or go to the Civic Media website, and that's civicmedia.us. And whether it's our show, whether it's Kristen Bry's show, As Goes Wisconsin, Todd Alba, Chad Holmes, Devil's Advocates, the new Town Call show that has Willie Moulter and Luke Mathers over the noon hour. So many more. So many shows there. Wisconsin-made shows. Wisconsin-made shows of all types. There's a lot of news talk here from somebody who definitely comes from a center-left position. We have a former Republican legislator who has a show here. Have a couple of things that kind of come from a center-right standpoint. We have Charlie Behrens, who comes from a comedic standpoint. We talk about the arts. I mean, so many Wisconsin-made shows on the Civic Media Radio Network. I should note again, as always, that Up North News itself is a separate entity from Civic Media. You can find our work at upnorthnewswi.com, but we are just pleased as punch to be able to be here from 6 to 8 every weekday morning as both of these organizations try to inform Wisconsinites on the news, the headlines, the topics, and the features throughout the course of every single day. To that end, if you go to Up North News on social media and look for Up North News WI, if you're searching, on the Up North News Facebook page, among the recent posts, the finalists have been named for the Sporkies. The Sporkies are the kind of like the Oscars of food, if you will, for the Wisconsin State Fair. And, you know, the Wisconsin State Fair has had no shortage of unusual foods, shall we say. Aaron Zommers, and I don't know if you have any that you've tried that are especially tasty as opposed to, I don't know, gross.
I don't think I've ever actually been there.
To the Wisconsin State Fair?
Yeah, I don't think I have.
I've been a couple of times. Again, you know, it's in West Dallas, a Milwaukee suburb, so it's a bit of a hike for a lot of folks, but can be totally worth it. And you can get some things that you might expect, like deep fried apple pie, and then
deep
there's people
everything.
That yeah deep fried everything. But another one of the Sporky finalists is a beer cheese lava cake.
Interesting.
There's also something called the dill pickle donut. I'm not kidding. I'm looking at a donut that has some dill pickle juice, whipped cream cheese, topped with thick-cut dill pickles and a dill sprinkle.
Well, you know, if you put pickles on a sandwich, I suppose this... I'm just trying to justify it.
There's also a sweet and savory funnel cake fries. They are cheese curds, there's crispy bacon pieces, a rich chocolate sauce, a cream cheese frosting glaze on these funnel cake fries. There's also the Wisconsin quesadilla. It is stuffed full of cheese curds and chunks of brats, grilled onions, peppers, shredded cheese, and then that quesadilla is cooked to a golden brown and served with sour cream and salsa on the side. I'm intrigued.
That just sounds like what I make for lunch when I'm lazy. Like, some people make a meatloaf with their leftovers, but I'll just toss it in a quesadilla or something.
Sure. You know, whatever works. I don't know that I've ever had, you know, brats and onions in my quesadilla, but I'd be willing to give that a try. So again, if you go to Up North News on social media, on our Facebook page, you will then find a link that would take you to that particular article about the Sporkies, along with a lot of the other day's news and things as well. And that news includes some work that was done in the middle of the night by the Republicans who run the Wisconsin Legislature's Joint Finance Committee. They didn't even start their meeting until sometime after 10 o'clock last night. And then they finally took a vote around 2:30 in the morning on the budget for the Department of Children and Families. You know, keep in mind the way you write a state budget is you go department by department by department. And yesterday was supposed to be the Department of Children's Families. It was on the agenda for 1 o'clock yesterday afternoon. Didn't meet until after 10. Didn't make a decision on some important matters until about 2:30 in the morning today, before they decided that they'd done enough dirty work in the dead of night and that it was time to go home. And we will tell you what it is that they did coming up in just a bit on Up North News Radio for this Friday morning. The Brewers were off yesterday, but they continue, or start rather, a six-game homestand against the Pittsburgh Pirates for the first three games. The Brewers entered the series a half game back of the Pirates, so this is a very pivotal series at American Family Field tonight, and then Saturday and Sunday afternoons. It's 51 degrees up here on Lake Wissota, 54 in Pleasant Prairie, 54 in Sturgeon Bay, Platteville coming in at 51, Medford 46, Superior a chilly 42 degrees. Now let's find out what the weather's going to look like for the full weekend across the state of Wisconsin. Jennifer Wachitsky from Weatherology joins us now to tell us all about it. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, well, it does look like we are expecting to see some sunshine or becoming mostly sunny for most today. Highs mostly right around average for the most part, lingering in the mid to upper 70s. Little cooler from Oshkosh down to Milwaukee. A pretty decent start to the weekend for most with sunny skies on Saturday, and a little warmer as a warm front comes through. For the central parts of the state, Wausau down to Madison lingering around 80. Low to mid 80s for western Wisconsin. Again, a little cooler for the eastern half of the state. Around Amory.
Aaron, did we lose Jennifer?
I'm not sure. It appears we've had some kind of connection error.
Oh, no. Well, it says she's on the phone there, so I think she might have had a little hiccup on the telephones. We'll see if maybe she gives us a call back in. I was going to ask her as well about whether there had been, are we done with the smoke for a while from the Canadian wildfires, and so we'll ask her about that situation if we can get her back into play as well. But again, our apologies. We were getting what appeared to be a pretty nice weekend forecast from Jennifer Wachitsky, and if we can get back and connected with her, then we will pass along that information to you. But I guess what we'll do is we'll carry on and tell you more about the late night that the Joint Finance Committee had at the state capitol. The Joint Finance Committee, as you know, writes the state budget for the legislature and takes this on a department-by-department basis. And in doing so, last night, had a very big decision to make on the Department of Children and Families. A lot of different programs in there, as you can imagine. And one of them, one very important one, deals with the topic of affordable and accessible child care. It's something that it's a problem that was already brewing. The pandemic simply escalated it. But Governor Evers and others worked on some of the federal pandemic aid and found a way to help prevent more child care providers from having to go out of business during the pandemic. They created a program called Child Care Counts. And that financial assistance did so much good for so many providers. In fact, more than 4,000 childcare providers, ensuring with about 22,000 childcare professionals, caring for about 113,000 kids. Let me give those numbers again because they're big and there's a lot of them. 4,300 childcare providers, 22,000 childcare professionals, 113,000 kids, all benefited from the Child Care Counts program, which distributed just under $400 million in pandemic relief in order to stay open. And that's just statewide. If you look just at the Republican members of the legislature's Joint Finance Committee, there's 563 child care providers in their district, representing about 80% of the providers in their district. So the Republicans on Joint Finance understand the importance of affordable and accessible daycare as well. So Governor Evers took a look at the state budget as he was writing up his proposal. Have I mentioned once or twice that there's a surplus of $7 billion that legislators and the governor can work with to invest properly and get the most out of it? Well, Governor Evers looked at that and said, let's make this Child Care Counts program permanent. And let's put $340 million in it. $340 million to make the program permanent. Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee at 2:30 this morning took a vote on it, and they decided to change that number to zero. Now, Republicans say they're working on a package of bills about child care, and that might include $15 million for a revolving loan fund. I mean, that does not even count as a drop in the bucket. If you just looked at this on its own, about what it means for all of the parents who've had to leave the workforce because they couldn't find accessible or affordable child care, what that's done to the businesses, the toll it's taken on providers, the low wage for child care workers, if you just looked at that alone, it makes no fiscal sense to, if you care about the Wisconsin workforce at all, to ignore this problem, to zero it out. And you certainly wouldn't want to necessarily tie it to other matters. I don't know, say the issue of abortion. I mean, that's incendiary enough. It's divisive. It's political. There are a lot of raw feelings about it since the Dobbs decision. And yet, the most powerful Republican in Wisconsin, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, speaking at a Wisconsin Health News luncheon a couple of days ago, managed to tie the workforce shortage in Wisconsin to the abortion issue. And the things that he says over the next 90 seconds may be some of the most offensive things you hear all week. Let's give a listen.
Of where we are in society with abortion, it has become so controversial and so political. It shouldn't be that way. It should be the most personal decision that you could possibly make. So I was probably 15 when I realized that my parents' anniversary was in February, and I was born in July. So I went to my mom and I said that those dates don't really match up. And I went back, and my grandma was alive at the time, and luckily they had a huge wedding and they made the decision as a family that I could be here, right? That is not the choice that a lot of people make, and that saddens me because I think how many Americans today would be alive in our workforce doing all the things that help make America great if we hadn't had such easy access to abortion. I think it's bad for society. But I also feel like there are certain circumstances where we have to find where is the natural middle ground for the world. I think if you ask most people, they do not believe that abortion should be used for birth control. That's why we supported a bill last session, and we're going to put it on the calendar again, to have birth control over the counter. I think it should be super easy to have access to. There should be no hiccups. You should be able to get birth control so you can control your own reproductive decisions. But if you get pregnant, I feel like then you've made the commitment to deliver that child, and that's what should happen in my world.
If you get pregnant, you've made a commitment to deliver that child. The words of Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, continuing the trope that people are using abortion willy-nilly as birth control. And he went on to say earlier, it saddens him to think how many Americans would be alive in our workforce doing things to make America great if we hadn't had easy abortion access. That is the Wisconsin Republican answer to the workforce shortage, is more forced birth. That in the mind of Robin Voss, if every woman over the past 50 years had been forced to give birth for no matter what the reason, and assuming the moms and the kids all survived childhood and the horrors that might have come from abusive parents, parents in poverty, and so on, that they would all become these productive members of the workforce doing things to help make America great. I don't know that most folks were expecting the issue of abortion to get wrapped up into it, much less the issue of, you know, telling women that if you get pregnant, you've made the commitment to deliver that child. But that is what was at play at 2:30 this morning when the Joint Finance Committee Republicans decided that they were going to bring to $0 the amount of money going into a program that would make childcare more accessible and more affordable. This is going to have an impact, a real impact, right away. According to a survey of 1,200 early care and education providers in Wisconsin, more than 27% said their program would have closed during the pandemic without those grants. And that when the grants end, when the federal money eventually runs out over the next few months, more than 60% say they'll have to raise tuition on families as if childcare weren't expensive enough already. About one third of providers say they will either have to cut wages or not provide salary increases for childcare workers who, on average, earn $12.66 an hour. And one more thing, there were at least some Republicans who were getting behind a proposal to finally end the Republican bloc on expanding Medicaid in Wisconsin, known here as Badger Care. For more than 10 years, Republicans have been blocking expanding stable and affordable health care to tens of thousands of Wisconsinites. It has cost our state literally billions of dollars because of the hissy fit they're still throwing more than a decade after the Affordable Care Act passed. And Robin Voss was still speaking out about that this week, referring to Medicaid as free stuff and saying that Obamacare, as he still likes to call it, provides enough, how did he put it, like super duper cheap care, that that's an excuse for not using every tool at your disposal. So anyway, I mentioned some Republicans are getting behind a proposal to finally end that blockade, at least not for everybody, but at least for new moms for the first year after childbirth, so that they could have that stable, affordable health care for themselves until their baby turned one. We know the problems of maternal mortality, not just during pregnancy, but for the year after childbirth, the health issues that are out there. Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee killed that idea too in the middle of the night. Mark from Prairie du Sac is on the line. Mark, good morning.
Oh, you just really got me fired up with this past topic here. Has Robin Voss been shooting blanks all these years because he's been married several times and he hasn't produced any little workers, in his marriages? That it is just so deeply offensive to me that I have known a few female friends who, had been raped and. Fortunately, they weren't faced with that decision. But I mean, what if they had? I mean, that it is just the heartlessness of that man is just. And talking about healthcare, here's a man who has. How many years have we provided healthcare for him? As a legislature, through the because he's a public employee. I mean, I enjoyed that as when I was working for the state, and affordable health care, it is just disgusting that he and his fellow Republicans are denying to other citizens the right to affordable health care when it's something provided to them, along with their salaries, along with their per diems. Mm-hmm. And the absolute hypocrisy of these men and women is just galling. I mean, it just I mean, I think you're
speaking for a lot of people, Mark, because I can hear it in your voice, and I appreciate you bringing up a couple of points that I missed as well that are important to be made. Remember, 54% of Wisconsinites live in a childcare desert. This would have helped. Republicans at 2:30 this morning said, "Screw you." We're back with Mark Jacob coming up in just a bit. You're up north. In case you missed it earlier, during our history lesson and music break, the Blues Brothers movie came out this day in 1980. How can that be 43 years already? Mark Jacob joins us from Chicago, former Metro editor for the Chicago Tribune, author, former editor with the Sun-Times. We're talking about some of the media coverage of this week's stories. Mark, good morning.
Hi, how are you, Pat?
Well, good. I mean, it certainly has been a busy one, and we are most decidedly going to get to the Trump arrest in Miami and some of the media coverage of it. But as I was looking at, you know, various things in the media this week, I really want to start with something that is relatively small, but I think illustrates some of the points we try to make when we talk about the media these days. And it comes from a single TV in Grand Rapids, Michigan, WOOD, Wood TV. And they are under fire now after there was a management memo telling reporters to cover fewer LGBTQ events during Pride Month because the memo said it had been upsetting their conservative viewers, and that the memo asked staff to, quote, do some work to discern the newsworthiness of Pride events. Mark, it gets to the point of know where you're getting your news. And when we talk about, you know, what we do here, which is point of view journalism, it's still fact-based, but it's rooted in values that we share with you, as opposed to news that is dictated by the whims of management that you wouldn't have known about if this memo hadn't leaked.
Right. And then they want to pretend that they're objective, you mm-hmm. know, that they're, you know, fair. And that's another thing about the, you know, news media and coverage is that you don't know what they decided not to cover. And you don't know why they decided not to cover things. And a memo like that, I mean, you know, having been in the news business for, you know, four decades, I know a memo like that is, in effect, the journalists are smart people. They can translate that into don't cover Pride events. You know, just go easy on the gay stuff because that's going to, you know, upset somebody. And what I also learned, you know, my decades in journalism was that, you know, top executives in newsrooms can be pressured by outside influences. They can, you know, somebody blows in a call to them and says, you know, oh, I'm appalled that you covered this or that you wrote this. You know, often people below them will hear about it. And it was always disappointing to me in my career that the top people were so, you know, you're so susceptible to pressure from outside, that they didn't just kind of blow it off and say, no, we're going to do what we're going to do. Because that's what good journalists do, is just decide what they should cover, what serves their, you know, their audience, and go cover it.
And look, I've never worked in sales significantly in broadcasting or in newspapers or whatnot. I understand it's not an easy job, but it's still the baseline response to anything like that needs to be, well, Mr. Potential Sponsor or Ms. Potential Sponsor, you're going to sponsor us. You're going to buy your commercials based on the entirety of our mm-hmm. work. You don't get to cherry pick any of it. If you don't like it, that's fine. But you're going to watch your commercials here or take your business here because of what we do in total. And yet there are still far too many executives and others willing to take an isolated case and not stand up for their newsroom, but instead tell their newsroom to bend to the will of the person complaining.
Right. And it also goes way beyond journalism, too, because you don't think that marketing departments of big corporations saw what happened to Bud Light?
Oh, yeah.
You know, of course they did. They know that, I mean, it's something as innocuous as what Bud Light did, which was design a little custom beer can for some trans celebrity. And you know, and that just blew up on them. And according to the statistics I saw, they lost a bunch of money off of it. And, you know, and now the right is going completely, you know, insane. They want to, you know, boycott Fox News and this. And I don't know what they want to boycott Cracker Barrel. I mean, it's nuts time now. And I don't know what they're going to do other than just sit in their homes and, you know, I pop microwave popcorn or something. I don't understand how they can boycott everything for being, you know, for just for being inclusive.
Right. Let me get to one more example, and it is from it's actually not a TV one. It's social media. And it's a news report from Huffington Post that says Twitter blocked the promotion of a Democrat's campaign video because it expressed it expressed support for abortion rights. So again, Twitter, since Elon Musk took over, can willy-nilly decide, you know, he likes to say he's a platform. I don't pick sides. You know, everybody right. can come on. But in fact, they do. And that they can do that with partisan politics should be concerning to everybody, no matter what side of the fence you're on, because it could just as easily happen to you.
Yeah. Have they, you know, have they explained why they did that? I saw that and it just struck me as, boy, that kind of policy, if, you know, taken worldwide, it would really be like chilling. And also nobody would stay on Twitter if they're going to do crap like that. I mean, that's ridiculous. And the thing about Elon Musk is the idea that he's a free speech absolutist is that's just a lie, mm-hmm. which is like one of many of the things that he said that are BS. And so Twitter needs to be watched. You know, I'm very active on Twitter, and because I'm not going to like surrender the battlefield. I'm not going to, you know, retreat just because of, you know, this guy's so bad. But it's still really important to get the message out there. And so I still, you know, argue my points. But there comes a time when everyone just kind of says, enough of this idiot. We're going away.
Yeah, exactly. All right, now let's turn to the second arrest and arraignment of Donald Trump, this time on federal charges in Miami. So the media has now had practice at this. They've had practice covering Trump on this, the eighth anniversary of the escalator ride from hell for this country. Did you see much that was different in the second arraignment compared to the one in Manhattan? Did the one in Miami have coverage that made you say, okay, they're getting more responsible with how they're covering Trump? Or was it more of they appear to have still learned next to nothing?
I think, you know, obviously when you talk about the media is a lot of different things. Right. And so it's, you know, so it's really impossible to, like, you know, label everyone one, you know, paint with one brush. But most of the news media, I thought, did a pretty good job. I mean, you know, you had this situation where in a lot of cases there were more reporters than protesters in some cases. And you didn't have, you know, you really did have Trump kind of doing the same kind of crap he did before January 6th, you know, calling his people to come out, and they didn't come out in general. And the news media did a good job afterward of, you know, busting, or at least somebody did, of busting Trump when he went to that restaurant in Miami afterward and said, food for everyone, and then didn't pay for anyone's food, you know, which is so Trumpian. I mean, that was just, you know, rings the bell there.
But that's just good. That's just good follow-up reporting.
Right,
is what
exactly.
That is.
So I think there's some good journalism. Now, some people really went after the New York Times for the front page the next day, which had a very noble picture of Donald Trump. You know, here he is, you know, looking like, you know, he's a leader of the free world, next to an air, you know, in front of an airplane. And it just does depend how you put things and how you cast them. And New York Times did cast Trump with this nobility that he obviously hasn't earned.
Well, without a doubt. And there was just a big outcry that it makes me wonder. And again, you're a former Page One editor, mm-hmm. that do you get so granular sometimes about, you know, fact checking the stories and things that I can't believe that at no point it occurred to that Page One editor here. How does this look? Not just is it right, but how does it look?
That's a good question. And that's actually what that's the main job of the Page One editor, I think, is to see everything in context, mm-hmm. and to make sure that, you know, you've seen a lot of things, and, you know, on the web where it shows a picture and then a headline and they go so terribly together that it's hilarious. And so the Page One editor is supposed to make sure that the photo and the headline and everything on the page kind of works together and sets the right tone. And, you know, somebody has been arraigned on charges of stealing state secrets and then lying to the FBI to hide, you know, confidential information, and you're going to like make him look like, you know, he's, you know, leader of the free world, does set the wrong tone. But I mean, last night online, the New York Times spelled Yogi Berra's name wrong in a headline.
Oh no.
So mistakes happen, you know, and that was a bad one to get wrong considering, you know, that he was kind of a famous Yankee, but yeah. What I tweeted on that was that newspapering is 90% mental and the other half is physical. That's what Yogi Berra said about baseball, mistakes happen. And I always felt like you're really under the gun when you're doing page one. And I always felt like that a newspaper should be judged over a long period of time and not just on one isolated thing. So if the New York Times was, you know, otherwise good, don't think they should get busted for that front page. But
they haven't over a long period of time. They've been far too deferential.
No, they have been. And they've also, you know, and they got Maggie Haberman, who just treats Trump like he's some interesting celebrity, like he's one of the Kardashians. You know, it's instead of like the biggest criminal in American life right now. I mean, and he is. I mean, is there any more bigger enemy of democracy than Donald Trump right now? I don't think so. And to treat him like, oh, isn't this an interesting guy? Oh, here's his latest. And isn't this amusing? He's not amusing, Pat. Donald Trump is not a funny guy. We shouldn't be laughing at him. He's a deadly serious enemy of democracy, and we need to treat him that way. And the New York Times, it's really interesting that what's supposed to be the most important and serious newspaper in America is so unserious sometimes.
It's so true. And so that takes us to the other ones that we do expect that from, the ones that I don't consider to be news networks. They're not engaged in journalism. They're engaged in propaganda, essentially. And this whole time that this was unfolding for Trump in Miami, you would swear that, you know, Hunter Biden had just been arrested or was about to be arrested, or that Hillary Clinton was about to be arrested, because they spent so much time engaged in the disinformation campaign here. And I wouldn't even dream of calling it misinformation. This is outright disinformation that they're engaged in.
No, it's not that, you know, that they don't understand what's going on. They know exactly. And just to be really clear, the difference between misinformation and disinformation is whether you're lying on purpose or not.
Right.
Or whether you're just spewing stuff that's wrong, but you just don't know it. And they know it. They do. And it's so instantly it's all about Hillary. You know, that's really ancient news here. And clearly what she did is nothing like what Trump did. And as many people have pointed out, if even after all this, you know, stealing of documents and hiding them and leaving them where Chinese spies or whoever can get to them, even after that, if he would have given the documents back, they wouldn't have charged him. But instead, he in ways that are documented, he asked his aide to move them. He tried to hide them. He lied about whether he had them. I mean, how can you be more guilty than that? You know, the guy took extraordinary measures to violate the law. And that's different from what Hillary did. And I don't think she should have set up a private server. No, she shouldn't have. But he had all the Trump kids in the, you know, and had private email, you know, emails when they were in the White House, Jared and Ivanka. And, you know, they did the same thing Hillary did after Hillary. After it had been shown that they shouldn't do it.
After they knew that.
And
go ahead.
No, I know. And then this Biden crime family crap, which is people like Chuck Grassley, you know, publicly saying, well, they throw a lot of allegedlys in the sentences, but they still accuse them of things that they absolutely can't prove. And they keep on saying, well, there's a witness who can say this, a witness. And, you know, and yesterday, Rudy Giuliani said, well, the witness died 3 years ago. This is crazy stuff. This is dog ate my homework kind of politics.
And yet people are still buying into it. So let me just wrap things up by saying, because I neglected to mention it before, that you do write columns for Courier Newsroom. You'll find that at couriernewsroom.com. And one of your latest is 33 Bathrooms, the Right's Reaction to the Indictment. And you gave examples from Ron Johnson and Kevin McCarthy on down on the excuses, basically, that they're making.
Right. The idea, you know, McCarthy with the, well, at least a bathroom door locks. Well, it locks from the inside. Is one of the documents going to lock the door? I mean, that's nuts. And then you have, you know, Ron Johnson saying, quote, Mar-a-Lago is a pretty safe place, unquote. when during the Trump administration, we found like spies walking, walking in and out of the place. It's the things that they say are just insane. Jesse Waters on Fox News, who's a completely dishonest guy, says, well, if Trump was running a cocaine ring out of the Mar-a-Lago, maybe we would do something about it. But, quote, we're talking about a piece of paper.
Yep, exactly.
And it's like just saying these are piece of papers. Well, the Declaration of Independence was a piece of paper. Yeah, I think it was kind of important.
It was. Mark Jacob. Sorry, I've run out of time, Mark.
Okay.
On Twitter, Mark Jacob 16 on Twitter. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Talk to you.
Kristen Bry up next. No, it's not Kristen's show starting yet. It's just that she picked one of the best songs to be the opening theme. I hate myself for loving you, said the girl who left Wisconsin and then came back. Kristen Bry joins us now. Kristen, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's so great to have you here. I know that the show it's already moved to a little bit earlier and you've had to get up a little bit earlier. And last I heard, you're still, what's the medical term? Is the medical term very pregnant? Where are we at on that?
I don't think medically I'm very pregnant yet. I am currently binary pregnant instead of not pregnant, but I think the very gets added around the third trimester when I don't want to do anything except lay down and fan myself.
And so far so good. I know everybody asks you that, but
yeah. So far so good. I think in comparison to when I hear stories about gestational diabetes and being sick for all 9 months and all the things that how much harder pregnancy can be, I am grateful that so far it's been pretty smooth.
The show is on everywhere on Civic Media weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon, except Madison, where it's on from 11 a.m. to noon. And I really wanted to get Kristen on after hearing her mention last week. I just really liked your reaction to, and it's a cliche. It's an honor to be nominated, blah, blah, blah. Still, a nominee from, was it Milwaukee Magazine for Best Radio Show?
Yeah. I was very surprised about that. But I had a friend who texted me, I think while I was actually on air, and she's like, did you know you were nominated for this? And I go, no, I did not. And so that was very flattering and very cool. And so we'll see. It's talk radio is such a establishment down here that certainly the other people and the other men who were nominated have been doing this a long time, including our own Earl Ingram. But it was very cool.
It was, and very well deserved. But I wanted to ask from, the background to get here. And you talk about, having family in the Wisconsin Rapids area and then leaving for the coasts. But I guess I'm not quite sure. When you left the state to pursue something, you had so many hats: actress, stand-up comic, filmmaker. When you first decided, I'm heading out to try this, what was the first this?
Oh, the first this was actually, it was acting. Okay. So I grew up doing, we were a sports family. My dad played basketball for the Badgers in the 70s. And certainly my brother was a big athlete. I was an athlete as well, but somehow I got the bug pretty young for performing. And basically by the time I was in high school, I was balancing basketball and theater. And then my junior year of high school, I had the opportunity to go to like a talent search in LA. And I think the way my dad tells the story is like, yeah, we let you go because I just figured you'd fail and then you'd come focus on basketball. turned out I did not fail. I got 10 different offers from different agents and managers who were like, come to pilot season. Like, I would love to represent you. And so by the time my second semester of my junior year, we did pilot season in LA, and then my senior year we moved to LA and I finished high school out there and didn't even walk with my class because I had missed too many days of school to go to auditions. And then I did that until I was about 20. And then around then I was like, I should go to college.
And you did, you got, It says here, you graduated Phi Beta Kappa with a degree in women's health and public policy from UC Berkeley, which is why I completely see why you and Dr. Lyerly have teamed up for a public service announcement on Thursday mornings. Women's health and public policy, that's not just something as a talk show host, that's right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah. I really thought that I was going to go do like family planning in other countries when I first graduated, but you know, things change. I was super passionate about kind of the intersection of policy, public health, women's studies specifically. I mean, my honors thesis was on the influence of microfinance on maternal mortality. And big reveal, when you give money to women and let them decide like how to use it, maternal mortality goes down.
Which was, I think, outlined in the medical journal, duh. But yeah. And yet our public policymakers still can't seem to figure that out. So would you say that, you know, again, we've talked about, you know, being an actress, a filmmaker, a comic, but have you always been a bit of a news hound, or did other later events like, you know, the Trump election or the pandemic trigger that instead?
More the latter, I would say. Like, I think by the time I was around, when I started going to college, I certainly cared about the news more. I cared about politics more, but it really wasn't until kind of getting snapped out of my echo chamber. I was living in San Francisco when Trump got elected, working in tech. And, you know, I think I was very much one of those people who was in the, like, Hillary is obviously going to win because you're just surrounded by everyone who thinks like you. And that was a big wake up call for me as far as like being asleep at the wheel and just assuming other people had, you know, democracy under control. And so that was kind of the turning point of quitting. In 2017, I quit tech entirely and was like, there's something here. Like, there's something between meshing my performing background with politics and like sharing information, but making it digestible. And like, that was kind of the start of all of this.
And so here you are. And so I'll ask one more quasi-political question here. And it's because, again, you've got the perfect theme song about this, you know, hate myself for loving you. And when you think about Wisconsin, what is it about Wisconsin that makes us such an interesting swing state, meaning there's so much potential, and yet sometimes it's so maddening? What, have you figured out our state yet?
No. Absolutely not. I had a couple of weeks ago, and we probably can do another one this morning, because I'm certainly, that's where I'm starting my show this morning, is the fact that our Republican legislature is not going to fund childcare counts. And
nothing.
As a woman who's pregnant, that is wildly disappointing. But a couple of weeks ago, when Minnesota, our neighbors to the west, passed their revolutionary budget that included paid family leave, I was like, I don't like being jealous of Minnesota. Like, this is not a comfortable feeling for me. Mm-hmm. And yet here we are. And I don't know, you know, it's interesting because I think there's just so much, there's still so much hope. Like, I think about the people who have been here working since Act 10 happened and since Scott Walker's turnover and took over, and there was been so much decline across a lot of things that people care about. And yet a lot of those same people have not given up and are still here, are still fighting and still advocating. And having such a huge win in April, I think, bolsters that feeling of hope. And I think there's just this like commitment and belief that like we can win it back. Like, we can get mm-hmm. better again.
I think you've nailed it. And that it's something that you continue to, you know, espouse on As Goes Wisconsin, weekdays from 10 a.m. to noon. Thank you. It's so nice to get you up early and chatting with us finally.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you'll be on my show next week at 10:30.
You got it.
Friday.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Talk to you later. That's going to do it for us. Coming up, Motherhood Monday. We'll hear from the ladies from Motherhood for Good, Sherita with her top three Up North News social media news stories, Dr. Kristen Lyerly as well. Have a great weekend. We'll see you come Monday.